Do you know who the smartest person in Chicago is? Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, who was in Mexico during the Democratic National Convention. The rest of us watched it. Jeff enjoyed the margaritas and the fish tacos. Man, you are the smartest. But for the rest of us, what we saw was the Democrats stuffing reality into the memory hole, stuffing Kamala Harris into the memory hole when she wasn't vice president. All she was born in a peach blossom, and the dew was her baptism. And talking about all this will be Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus, University of Chicago. You can get all the stuff on charleslipson.com. And Jeff Carlin of WGN Radio is here, of course, with us. And I'm John Cass, executive editor of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And where are you as Kamala Harris is reborn, as Robert F. Kennedy chases after that pretty red balloon of hers, trying to burst it and make her cry? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way, that's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Well, as promised, here to talk about the Democrats pushing everything into the memory hole is none other than Professor Charles Lipson, our friend, Professor Emeritus, the Ritzma Chair at the University of Chicago, contributor to many publications, from Real Clear Politics to The American Prospect to, I don't know, just many, many. I don't have the list in front of me, and I should.
Of course. CharlesLipson.com, too, right?
Yes. Yeah. Where you can always get a good cup of Professor Lipson's common sense. CharlesLipson.com.
You missed all the free newspaper handouts at local strip malls. That's really the heart of my audience.
You and Benjamin Franklin.
like that poor mother and son standing on the steps of Operation Push, handing out the Trotsky paper, and all these women in their leather coats and fur coats, black women driving Lexuses and so forth. They didn't even stop to look at them.
Oh, my.
Anyway, so what did you think? What are your impressions of the Memory Hole Convention?
First of all, I thought it was a very well-run convention inside the hall and outside. The main thing that could have gone wrong would have been big riots in Chicago. I mean, before the convention, the best job in the city was putting up plywood over the over really? Downtown windows. But it turned out there was very little of that violence. Inside the convention, it was a coronation. They had to get rid of Biden on the first day, and there was a giant sigh of relief you could hear from the faithful that he was gone. It's important to recognize why he was pushed out. He was pushed out kicking and screaming. It's important to recognize why he was pushed out and who pushed him out. Why he was pushed out was that after his debate performance, the mainstream media could no longer hide from the public what was now obvious, that the president was in serious cognitive decline. And that leaves open a question, by the way, who's running the country now? But and we still don't know the behind the scenes story of how he was pushed out, but we do know that it was basically Pelosi and Schumer plus Obama who pushed him out. And the reason they did that was that they not only knew he would lose the November election, but that he would cost them both the House and the Senate and probably a lot of governorships as well. Mm. But there's enough straight party voting across the country that it is very difficult for a down ballot candidate to win if the top of the ticket is losing by, let's say, more than 4 points. And that's what they were looking at, was that kind of a disaster. We don't know the threats. We don't know what kind of a horse's head was left in Joe Biden's bed, but something was. I don't think it was an inducement. I think it was a threat. And the behind-the-scenes stories are that there was a threat to invoke the 25th Amendment with Kamala Harris's approval. Now, that has not been substantiated, and of course the media hasn't asked. The media's performance through all of this has just been horrific. They were completely on Joe Biden's side until Pelosi switched. Once she and Obama and Schumer wanted Biden out, so did the media. And the headlines changed, the editorials changed, everything changed. And of course, now they're completely on board with their new candidate. But it really, they never reported on Biden's decline. The White House press corps, it was just abysmal. They failed. Their partisanship overrode any sense of journalistic integrity.
They are embarrassing, and I can't wait for the next White House Correspondents' Dinner to see if they're going to own up to it. Do you think they will, guys? I don't think so.
No.
I've got an article probably come out tomorrow in The Spectator. As you said, everybody can get hold of my articles at charleslifson.com. But I point out that real power means never having to say you're sorry.
That's that right. And truth. She did not say let them eat cake either. Right. Exactly.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, one of the things where some person has to be reeling and really upset by all this change has got to be Jill Biden. I mean, she was before that debate, everyone was talking about how great she was and how she's supporting her husband. And then there were the rumors that she's running everything and she's wielding the power here. And, she's and since she disappeared, I mean, I think the only story I heard over the convention was something about, she was going to be there and then she visited a bookstore and like, she's just gone, from the eye. And so I feel like she's the one who's reeling the most out of all of that. But Charles, what do you see as this? We head towards the home stretch here, and it's going to be chaos, I think, just because there's just untold what's going to happen. Do you think it's going to be this RFK bump is going to be replace Vance? Do you think, is there any way Trump does that, makes that maneuver? Because there was a story just the other day that he accidentally called Vance, RFK, this is our ticket's the best. Me and RFK is the best ticket ever. And you're like, well, okay. But are you leading to something? Is that even possible?
Well, the way I see it is that if you've got a really close election, mm-hmm. 10,000, 20,000 votes in any state, then everything makes a difference. The fact that Cornel West mm-hmm. will get some votes, the fact that Jill Stein, who is the Harold Stassen of this era, just runs every time and gets a few votes. All of them could make a difference. It's like the votes for Pat Buchanan in 2000, the hanging chads. Yeah. So all of them can make a difference. But the reporting that I've read is that the people who were Democrats who had been, or favored the Democrats who had been supporting RFK Jr., had already gone over to Kamala Harris. They may not have gone to Biden, but once Harris was on the ticket, they had already switched. So the votes that remained for RFK Jr. were probably votes that will now go to Trump. And if that's 1 or 2%, then that could make a difference in Pennsylvania or something. But I think the main point about the campaign is that it's going to be largely negative, and it will hinge a lot on whether, and it's a base election. And you could see that from both sides. By base election, I mean it's about turnout from your most avid supporters. Trump is running his rallies that way, and I think has made a mistake by failing to get out front to try to run a national advertising campaign to paint Kamala Harris as what he would call a left-wing San Francisco socialist or communist, they sometimes say. But and of course she's painting him on two big issues, which is abortion and January 6th, which is a cipher for the end of democracy. So right. this is a base election they're trying to turn out their base. And you could see that when she picked Tim Walz. He, from a state she doesn't need help in, passing right. over Pennsylvania, where she did need help, and picking the furthest left candidate who was still on the board. So, and a candidate with a lot of problems. She's really doubled down on that. And then Trump, in picking Vance, which he did when Biden was still his opponent, right. Was picked to lock in MAGA for 2028 and beyond.
Is there a mechanism, though? I mean, I'm forgive me for my ignorance, but he, you know, the votes, the delegate votes were cast. It was Trump Vance. Now it's is there a way he could dump Vance to for RFK? I mean, the endorsement's a huge deal.
No. It's not. I don't know that he could, but he certainly won't. Not only because it creates all this tremendous confusion, and because RFK comes with absolutely concrete shoes that would sink anybody. He's got a million bad ideas.
Right.
But when you drop your vice president, you're saying that the most important decision I've made in this campaign was wrong. And you just can't do that.
No.
Well, I personally think it was the correct decision to choose Vance. Mm-hmm. I think he's brilliant. I think he's a... Mm-hmm. He goes after the partisans that must be gone after, and this is the media in extemporaneous discussion. He can pivot quickly and go right after the CNN anchors or the CBS anchors who are pushing the Democrat talking points, and that those have to be addressed immediately, not the next day. And I think he's good at that. I don't know.
You make another important point, which is that we have a very rapid news cycle. And the fact that, for example, the RFK endorsement came out the day after the Democratic convention ended and effectively ended that being the lead story for another 2 or 3 days. So both candidates are moving that way. And then this podcast is an indication of another shift in the way that the media works, which is the media is now fragmented. It's not that everybody is listening to Walter Cronkite or Huntley and Brinkley. Right. It's that people can choose the sources that they like, and the sources they like tend to be the ones that confirm and reinforce and give information related to the views that they already have. So it's called confirmation bias, and we all have that. But professionals like you guys and like me, we all read the New York Times and we read the Washington Post and so forth, even though we know that those are really biased sources, because it's really important to read all these sources. But not everybody does that. Not everybody does that.
Yeah, they should. They don't require reading.
And they don't read it with the critical eye that you and I have. They pick sources that they think are reliable. And what they mean by reliable is that they reliably reinforce the views that we already have.
Well, I support trolls. I support trolls coming to John Cass News and and writing. If you're a subscriber, you can post your opinion, counter opinion to mine under the website, under the columns. But you know what? This is done in the name of free enterprise because you have to pay for the privilege. Unlike Charles Lipson, who like lets people read his stuff free, you're very kind. I'm more of a mercenary. I guess the Tribune taught me. And as long as they're paying, have at it, boys.
Well, mine is free because that's actually what the columns are worth.
Oh, no, they're not.
No,
they're not.
Not even close.
They're so not good.
No, it is an interesting change in the media environment. I mean, if you look, it used to be that an endorsement from the Chicago Tribune was a major thing. It used to be that it was on that the paper was on everybody's front steps. And now, you know, it's been weeks since I've looked at an online version of the Chicago Tribune, and they're hardly relevant. I mean, nobody could tell who they will endorse. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I just came back from Mexico, and I was at a very nice resort, and they give you free access to any newspaper pretty much in the world. Mm-hmm. And for you, a digital reader, so you can sit by the pool and, you know, being who I am, of course, I'm doing that. But I had to like search specifically for the Tribune. Like it didn't even show up. I mean, we're talking one of the papers, you know, you read news stories from the turn of World War One, and it's, you know, Tribune or the Civil War. It's the Tribune, you know, everyone was referencing those in historical documents. Not even a blip. Wouldn't even show up unless I searched for it. I mean, that's how far gone.
And can you get NPR?
See the, yeah. Oh, yeah.
God. Did you see the cover of Time magazine? The only way you'd see it, of course, is if others put it up. But their picture of Kamala Harris on the front page looked the thing it most reminded me of was, I mean, it was just, had everything but an angelic halo above her. And the thing that it most reminded me of is I had a roommate when I was in graduate school. I had a roommate who collected old Life magazines, and he would mostly resell them for a profit. But the most valuable one was one from the middle of World War II that had the similar kind of portrait of Stalin.
Yeah.
That was when he was our ally. And so American publications wanted to, and it was just beatific portrait of Stalin, this man who'd killed millions of people. Yeah. And of course, Life magazine and so forth, they were held responsible for that after the war when anti-communism became a big thing. But this is now what's left of Time magazine and all the legacy media. By contrast, what's rising up are publications like Barry Weiss's Free Times, Free Press, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Free Press.
And, you know, where a bunch of, but these are columnists. This isn't hard news reporting for the most part. And so that's one of the things that may go missing in all of this is more sort of even-handed reporting. What's happening in the war in Ukraine? What's happening with this tax proposal and so forth?
What I do is I go to Real Clear all the time.
Yeah, it's excellent. Real Clear Politics, listeners should know, not only runs, not only has their famous collection of polls, but runs the day's columns two or three times a day from both sides. So you can, by going down and clicking on them, you can actually see what Republican columnists are saying, what Democratic columnists are saying, what people on the far left and so forth.
Ecumenicism. Right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. It's the sort of thing we used to encourage it on campus, but now it's a problem on campus.
I have to ask you one thing that you brought up, and both of you, and that is this business of Stalin and going forward. The whole the commentary during the Stalin years was forward. His hand would extend forward in those publicity shots. The posed in the statues where hand reached forward, and Kamala Harris is now talking about, we're not going back, we're going forward, we're not going back. And I wonder, what is that about? What is, I don't, you know, it's too easy just to say she's a commie, which I really don't think. Communists were a little bit more economically literate than Kamala. But whatever it is, it's that business of going forward. Where does that come from, Professor?
Well, first of all, that's the main claim of progressivism. I mean, just think of the word progressive. You're making progress. You're moving forward. It's also an attempt to link in the Harris case, it's an attempt to say electing Trump is going backwards. Trump ought to capitalize on that. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Are you better off at home? Are you better off abroad? So what she says is going backwards is actually for Trump recapturing a better time under his presidency. But it has another advantage. Forward doesn't mean anything. It's a Rorschach test. Mm-hmm. You know, my favorite joke about that is a man comes in to a psychiatrist for various problems, and the psychiatrist shows him an ink blot, a Rorschach, and the man doesn't say anything. He shows him two more, the man doesn't say anything, and the psychiatrist finally says, well, when I show you these ink blots, you have to say something. And the man says, look, I didn't come here to be shown all these dirty pictures. And so you read into this ink blot forward whatever you want. If for you, it may be a dirty picture. It may be communist, you know, you associate it with Stalin. For others, it's progress. It's a brighter future. But the point is, except for the fact that she's going to spread between $1.7 and $2 trillion on an already inflated economy and therefore jack up prices, she's going to get $25,000 to all new homeowners, which will immediately raise the price of all new homes by $25,000.
Which we don't have enough.
She's going to tax the rich, right, whatever that means. Besides that, she doesn't have any proposals. What's her proposal for closing the border? I hadn't heard one. What's her proposal for electric cars versus is she still going to phase out all internal combustion engines? I hadn't heard. What's her proposal for fracking? She's leaking things behind the scenes anonymously. She won't say anything for the record, and they hadn't put out any policy proposals. And as long as the mainstream media is willing to genuflect in front of her, why should she?
Yeah. I think it's also that the speed at which she can retain this information and then regurgitate it is hampering them. Because, I mean, how long was it before she did anything after it was announced that Biden was stepping down? There was nothing. I mean, there was like 2 weeks where there's no, hey, policy, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do something. And the first thing she did was pick walls. And then she goes to the taxing thing. And you're like, okay, well, that I feel like you could have got a lot more done in 2 weeks than just that.
Why should she, though? I mean, did you ever play horse, basketball? If you made a hook shot and the other guy couldn't make the hook shot, you just kept shooting hook shots until you won the game. She was the media was on her side. Nobody was forcing her to say anything. Eventually, the media, after basically we're frozen in place until the 10th of September, which is when the debate will occur. That debate, she won't have a teleprompter. She's being prepared by Hollywood's best, not Washington's best policymaker types. She's being prepared by people who are what Socrates and Plato critiqued as the rhetoricians, the people who could just make arguments to win, weren't really concerned with the substance. But she's just a word salad machine, and she's got to come out with some serious policies, and she's got to be able to defend them extemporaneously.
But what effect does the media... We all know that the media skews left. I mean, I knew it years ago, and it got worse. And I tried to fight it, but the tsunami was, you know, from the left, and that's all it was. But what effect does it have on a politic, on a people?
It's
when they don't expect. Oh, well, she kind of agrees with what I think, and so I'm not going to hold her to account. I mean, what does that affect on the republic?
Well, it has a number of effects, almost all of them negative. One is that a lot of the votes are going to be against Kamala or against Trump. And a country that is almost always voting against, it's not a good way to hold together a polity, especially when it's divided down the middle, almost 50-50. And worse, our differences have now taken on almost a religious overtone. Religion has declined very sharply. Organized religion has declined very sharply in the country. And the mainline Protestant faith, plus Reform Judaism and so forth, have declined even more sharply. They are really fading away. Not all of them, but many of them. And what's taken their place is a kind of faith in ideologies on both the left and on the right. And you can really see that because people are not just thought of as being wrong. They're thought of as being apostates who are going to hell because they are supporting. I mean, think about being an English, an untenured English professor who told anybody they were going to vote for Trump. That person would not get tenure. I don't care how many books they published, how many well-regarded books they published. They would just never get tenure. There's no way you could get tenure in a Middle East department if you were pro-Israel. That's long gone. But it spread to other departments. If you were pro-Israel, you couldn't get tenure in anthropology. So we have a kind of ideological world now in American politics. It's very negative. And the media has contributed to it by being essentially partisan. But there was one thing I would say that people on the right may have missed about the Democratic Convention. It emphasized patriotism.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
I like the camo hat. the thing is, yes, I know that they USA Today, USA, USA, I understand. I loved it. And it kind of erased my memory of people waving their hands up in the air and saying, don't shoot, right? Uh-huh, remember that?
Yeah. It was all false. It was a lie. That's right.
But, you know,
that person didn't say that in Ferguson, Missouri. Yeah.
But that they stuffed reality into the memory hole. And what came out of it was Kamala Harris, born in a peach blossom with the dew on her forehead as her baptism. I mean, they treated her like she was a creature from Fantasia, which apparently that's what it was. You know, the
what I thought when she kept emphasizing the McDonald's, working at McDonald's, if I were on the Trump team, I would say that was her last job in the private sector.
It was.
I mean,
well, no, she was also an apprentice under Willie Brown, was she not?
Well,
I don't know if they paid for that, but she learned her politics that
Willie Brown was what people need to remember is that Willie Brown was the single most powerful person in California politics at the time.
Yeah.
And she, I don't know, 30 plus years younger than him and became his paramour. But he then got her public jobs. So she used her connection to him as a step up on the ladder. I don't think that's all that unusual, but it's not something that and I would say this, that I really would like to see less personal attacks in this campaign. This is the sharpest difference on public policies between presidential candidates in a sense Hoover ran against FDR, right? I mean, nobody in our living memory has had this is not Eisenhower.
Won that one.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. But that was in the midst of a depression. What I would say about her campaign now, first of all, I would like it to be about policy, but Trump keeps making it about personality and her side keeps making it about personality. And I just hate to see that. The second thing is that I would say her campaign is about vagueness. It's about she couldn't use hope and
hope and change,
which was David Axelrod's slogan for Obama,
because who thinks Trump is going to win, by the way.
It's interesting. Axelrod's a very serious and thoughtful guy. Obviously a partisan on the left, but he's doesn't pull the shades down over his own eyes when he looks at the campaign. But the problem with running on, she calls it joy, whatever the hell that is. The problem is that when Obama ran, he was an outsider. We didn't have much about his public record. He was running against an incumbent Republican administration. Now, it was a new candidate, McCain, but he was running against the Republicans were in office. In this case, she's essentially running a hope and change against an administration she was part of.
Yeah, that's called schizophrenia for most people, but we call it American politics, right?
It is the truth. It's a strange campaign. That's the essence of the column I'll have out probably Monday, is how strange this campaign is. It's actually been two campaigns, right? There was a presidential campaign that Trump won against Biden. That's
right.
Over.
Right.
And now there's a second campaign. And these campaigns last forever, and then it takes... You know, when Britain voted, they just voted Labor in, they have the vote. It's one day. The vote is counted by that night. We have a new prime minister the next day. Here, they count for the next 3 weeks. And we start voting in about a week or two. It's just ludicrous. We've lost the sense. People who can't get to the polls should have an option, that's for sure. And there should be checks to make sure that everybody who is voting is legally eligible to
vote. That's racist.
I love the fact that to every event that the Democrats held in Chicago, you had to show an ID.
And get through three walls.
I just loved it.
Except for voting. Right.
Except for voting.
Right.
And do you think the media played that up? Not a chance.
No, yeah. But it doesn't surprise me at all that they're totally in the tank. Obama himself said so the other last time he talked about having a fantasy. You've seen that clip?
No, I hadn't.
From Colbert. Like he was interviewed by Colbert, and his fantasy was, he said, I could be in the basement and run the country. I don't have to deal with being a president. I could just do the stuff I want to do.
Well, he's the first former president to live on in Washington. And the whole administration is really filled with Obama people. And the policies are essentially Obama policies. But it was really striking when he played a critical part in getting rid of Biden.
Oh, yeah. He pushed him right off the cliff.
Yeah, but he didn't seem to want the complete anointing of Kamala Harris. Maybe he wanted something from her before he gave the endorsement, but Pelosi and Schumer engineered her nomination so quickly and so uniformly and so unanimously that Obama himself was ultimately forced on board with that phone call that he and Michelle made.
Kamala. Yeah.
Yeah. What a surprise.
I appreciate the subtleness of the argument, but yes, I do.
Yeah. But I mean, the fact is, Obama stays in Washington and that has a meaning. And the administration is filled with his people. But I think if she loses, there will be an interesting fight within the Democratic Party about whether they move back to the center or whether the people who are left are the people who are on the left and take it further into that. Sinkhole.
I hope Josh Shapiro understands that these leftists, these are so committed, these Marxists, Jacobins are so committed and so hateful of Jews that he should just switch parties and be the running mate for J.D. Vance, because that's what's coming. Josh Shapiro, J.D. Vance.
Look at what happened to Manchin. There's just no room in the party for those people. Yeah. But on the other hand, their position on most social issues and so forth doesn't give them any room in the Republican Party. Are there any Republicans who are... that one of the interesting issues for Trump now has to do with abortion. Given the way that the media works, it's been very hard for the Republicans to paint the Democrats as the extremists on abortion. But Trump's own position is really a kind of centrist one that is the majority in Europe and so forth. I think he's torn between emphasizing that and saying it's going back to the states, but I'm going to urge the states to go for, 20 weeks or something like that. And his thought that it's a base election and I don't want to get anybody who's already on my side not to come out and vote for me. By the way, speaking of Europe, I think that painting Kamala as a communist and so forth is hyperbole. It's way over the top. What I view her as is something like a European social democrat. That is the left wing center, the left wing parties that believe in government almost completely by regulation. They don't believe in seizing all private property, but this is essentially the difference between the kind of populism of Bernie Sanders on the left and the Elizabeth Warren view, which is that everything can be run by a government bureaucracy. Trump ought to exploit the fact that our government bureaucracies have not run things very well.
Those immigrants that both the left and the right glorify, the ones off Ellis Island, the ones like that our parents came from,
right,
and grandparents, right. They're the ones who could not open a business. I mean, that's how we got educated, by
right.
our parents opening businesses, and they could not open businesses under this right. climate, under this politic.
Well, and it's also true, the difference between local localities. If you go down to Texas, you can often, in almost all the cities, you can go into a place and get all your permits in one day, in one afternoon, right? In Chicago, you have to meet with the alderman and get permission right. to put up a sign, and it right. really helps to donate and all the rest. And you can just see that all the growth in the country, leaving aside Silicon Valley, that all the growth in the country is occurring in Texas and Georgia and Tennessee. People are shifting to places that are interesting to live. But one thing that I think is an issue that's just beneath the surface, and it's related to immigration, is public safety. And I think, you know, when the Democrats came to town, all of a sudden, our state's attorney, Kim Fox, was all in favor of public order. But we have whole areas of major cities, not just Chicago, where public order is broken down. In some parts, it's shootings. In some streets in San Francisco, it's that they've become open air latrines. And I think that the public order, people don't want to see order restored with an iron fist, but they do want to see public order restored. And I think it's a issue lurking just beneath the surface, and I think it's an issue on which Democrats are at a huge disadvantage.
I remember a guy who predicted all this and condemned the left wing of the Democratic Party for pushing it, George Soros and so forth. And there was one man, there were a couple, there was maybe three or four men that I count on who stood up for him. And one of them was Charles Lipson,
who wrote
a piece called "When J'accuse is Just a Smear."
Yes. Well, I appreciate you're saying that. You were smeared. And
I'll never forget your kindness and your generosity. I did not even know you were writing that piece. And I just want to say that even so many years later, it's 3 or 4 years now since we had the Summer of Love in 2020.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but I've got to say, as you were leading up to that, I thought you might mention Bill Clinton, because Clinton, among the Democrats, was the one, remember his Sister Soldier moment, and he was the one who stood up. That part of the party is gone.
Gone.
And the question is whether it can be resurrected. And the only chance for that, of course, would be if there's not just a defeat of Kamala Harris, because if she's defeated, they'll say bad candidate. But if people all up and down the ballot are defeated, if the Republicans, here's the dilemma that I think conservatives now face. If the Republicans win, Trump is a populist. He's not really a conservative. But in any event, conservatives normally believe in small changes, not rapid and big ones. But what's happened to American government is that it's become more and more national, not local, bigger and bigger, with higher and higher tax burdens reaching European levels. If the Republicans don't, and more, we are governed not by laws passed by Congress, but by regulations passed by bureaucrats who not only pass the regulations, they enforce them. And if you don't like what's happening, they try you in their courts. So all three, what we think of as the division of power, separation of powers among the three branches of government, are actually consolidated within the Department of Education or the Health and Human Services and so forth. If the Republicans don't manage to turn that back in a serious way during the during a Trump administration, then it will just continue onward. But turning it back in a serious way is really something that is different from the way that conservatives normally think about their program, which is small changes. So I think that's a big issue. And I think that's at the heart of Project 2025 hatred by the Democrats. They can see that that's a program to roll back the federal government.
If it's not rolled back, I think we get in the Harris time machine and get back to 1984, because that's where we'll live now.
Right. Except that those were the Reagan years.
I meant the Orwell years.
I know you meant Orwell. Yeah, I know you meant George Orwell.
You're a tough tester. You're a tough grader. To be in your class, but that's one thing about you being here that I love, and I want it, because so many did not have the opportunity to be your student. To sit in the class with Charles Lipson is the Chicago Way podcast, and we're just so blessed and lucky. You're a treasure, and you're an absolute treasure for Chicago and the people around it. So
you're very kind, John and Jeff. It's just such a pleasure to be on with you and chat in an open way about all the things that are on our mind now. And it seems like the country is really facing a very decisive choice.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Charles, for being here. And for Charles Lipson, Professor Emeritus, University of Chicago, the Ritzma Chair, with a new commentary out all the time. You could find it at charleslipson.com. And for Jeff Carlin, Executive Producer of WGN Radio, my friend and future physics teacher, and for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Thank you for joining us on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.